What?
You have to scream, I'm in!
I'm in. I am in.
There you go.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to get the big iPad. Is it me or do you have Olympic fever? Not at all, really.
Not at all.
Honest to God?
I got the bug. I got the bug. I got Olympic fever.
No.
Yeah, I got it.
You know how long
the Zika?
Yeah.
I've got State Fair fever. So many fun things are starting today.
The State Fair, the Olympics.
Something else downtown is starting.
Burger Bash? No.
No.
I keep talking about the
I
Burger
I
Bash.
I wish you'd let it go.
The burger thing was last week, right?
It was. It's
yeah.
over.
Flamme won.
They did?
Did you see that?
Yeah. Yes.
Oh,
We were just there.
You mean Hooters didn't win? That's weird.
No.
Hooters.
I told.
Isn't that ridiculous?
If you could just eat the skin on the wings, that,
which
I'd like
is,
Hooters.
Which is terrible. Well,
no, it's not terrible.
I don't know if Ronnie
I love
it.
I
don't like the way they scream and yell. That's, they always scare me.
What?
Aren't they screaming? The cooks are screaming in the back and stuff.
Mm-mm.
Yeah.
No. At Hooters?
Yeah. Yeah,
they got the checks on
really?
The zip line.
The I like the checks on the zip line.
Yeah.
reminds me of Stouts. You go to the shoe store.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, and the Parrot.
Parrot.
Yeah.
I wonder if they... I think they did a commercial, and they said, come on downtown and see the Parrot.
I'm sure they did. Isn't that shoe store like 100 years old?
Something like that.
Yeah, I think it's the longest running business in Indianapolis.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Is it really?
Uh-huh, that and the Red Garter.
Slippery Noodle.
Huh. Ooh, Slippery could be up there.
That's the oldest bar, yeah.
I heard that Parrot bit someone, and there's a lawsuit pending.
You're so full of shit.
I'm serious.
No, you're not.
Do you know look serious.
Do you know how strong a macaw's jaws are?
You take your finger off.
I feel like you just said Krav Maga.
Krav Maga jaw.
Give him the Krav Maga jaw.
I'm looking for
this. This is our first guest. I'm very excited.
Well, let's start it.
Hit it. Hi, welcome to the Chick McGee Show. I'm Chick McGee. That's everybody. Say hi after I say your name. All right.
Okay.
That's Jason Hofsetz.
Hi, Chick.
That's Jess Hooker. Hi, Jess.
Hey.
That's Jeff Vibbert. Hi, Jeff.
Present. I was different than everyone. Sorry.
That's not why you're different than everyone.
You're different, all right. How's your sad box?
It's in the car.
New sad. Did you really? Yeah. So we can see it?
Yeah.
Did you crack the windows for?
Yeah.
We'll probably get to that next week.
I was married to a couple sad boxes. Anyway, our guest today, the first guest on the Chick McGee Show on Podcast One is Donnie Baker.
Testing 1, 2, 3. present.
You know, as ornery as you are, I appreciate you waiting until I introduced you before you talked. That was nice. Thank you, Donnie.
At least I could do check. I try to keep some. I've been to JV. I understand what law and order is.
That's right. You got rules. And Donnie and I go way back, and Donnie and I and Jeff, well, everybody in the room and Donnie go way back, I guess, with the comedy tour and everything. And Donnie was on the old Off the Air podcast.
As
both, yeah.
Yes.
Well, as everybody, right?
Well, yeah, pretty much everybody.
Now you make me sound like Caitlin a little bit. Dick, blow my cover.
No, I enjoyed the Off the Air podcast. That was a lot of fun. I mean, it was just the time flew by, and it was a great trip down memory lane both times. So.
Yeah, I say I wasn't in there, but I was listening when you did it with the guys from Pork Pistols, and I still laugh.
Oh yeah,
You were actually I think you were talking to Joe just yesterday on speakerphone.
Yeah,
and I hear Joe.
Never put Joe on the speakerphone.
Well, and I didn't hear what was going on. I could just tell. I can't remember why I realized it was Joe. Like, oh, he's talking to Joe. And when I think Joe, all I think of was the ow, ow, or something.
Yeah. What, that's
story.
Not, yeah.
I'm not doing it right.
No, that Joe didn't make that noise.
No, Joe didn't.
Okay, yeah.
Joe's responsible for the noise.
Yeah,
according to Dusty, Joe hooked up with a lady that looked like Don Knotts after a show in Evansville.
This is a true story.
The daughter asked Joe, "Hey, it's been a long time for mom." So Joe ramps up the game.
Hey, it's been a long time for mom.
Joe was always one that would brag about his prowess, and so from a hot tub far away, Dusty and the others are ow, ow, ow. Just ain't only got it halfway in, man.
Oh my god,
that's the one.
That's exactly what Joe sounds like.
Surprisingly, it's not easy to do it in the water. You'd think it would be, but it's not.
Yeah, you're not supposed to.
No, none of you. None of you should say anything.
Well, yeah, the friction is, it's kind of...
It's odd.
Water is not a lube.
Water is not a lube. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
The buoyancy alone.
You think it's like, really? Yeah, let's go skinny dipping and do it in the water. And it's like, no, it
you
know, really doesn't.
Have you ever seen sperm eggs in the water when they're released? It's badass. It looks like a lava lamp.
Now, if you're confused, that's Donnie Baker. But Donnie Baker is performed effortlessly by the one, the only Ron Sexton. I want to get his name on there.
They're the same person?
They're the same person. Hi, Ronnie.
Oh, gosh.
Hello. Hi.
Do you? How often do you remember where you are when, or like the time when that like one person? I guess I do.
Oh, it blew my mind. I was
convinced.
When
they thought that he was a real person.
I was convinced that Haji, before I got on the show, Haji was a real person. Well, it wasn't a real person because I knew better, but Haji was played by Ace Cosby.
Really?
I was convinced.
This is the first time I've heard this theory.
Yeah. And I just blew my mind when he was actually portrayed by an asshole. And it was unbelievable.
Who's the asshole?
After.
Do you know?
I think so.
I don't know.
Yeah.
How do I know?
He started.
Would I know?
You would know, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, well,
actually, was just
know.
On the. I don't think you've ever met just him. On the show recently.
Yeah.
Like within a month.
Ago. Really?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Mm-hmm. Local only, though.
Actually, who would have believed that
he
was portrayed by Mark Much, one of the staff members of the Bob and Tom Show.
Right.
He did the Reverend Ernest Honestly. And
oh, God forbid you give your personal opinion on your podcast.
Well, we're going to keep it all.
Oh, okay.
So Ronnie does not only Donnie Baker, but you do Kenny Tarmac and Floyd the Trucker. Yeah. Floyd is the most amazing voice to me because once somebody tells me that they do a voice, I can kind of always pick out, okay, and I shut my eyes, I can see that person doing that voice. But Floyd reminds me of Caliendo's John Madden.
Yeah.
It sounds so different from his voice when you do Floyd. It's just...
Yeah, it's a breathing thing I think it throws off.
You've said before that it was a relative of yours?
Yeah, my grandmother grew up in... my grandparents, when I was little, we would always make trips to Salina, Tennessee. And it seemed like whether it was a male or female relative of mine, everybody kindly took the time to talk, you know, and always seemed like the old man down at the courthouse of Whitley would kindly have something to say to you. And they'd hold court right there. Let me tell you something. The one thing I know is eating healthy. And I'll tell you something.
But I don't know why. It's just one of those things. I think every character you do needs some kind of little hook or trick in it. And that's why on YouTube now with Donnie, I have this silly twitch where I kind of thought that I would – maybe it's a habit that Donnie had blowing the bangs out of his face all those years. Because
Getting forward great clips. So I would always knock him bangs out.
And there was a kid that I went to school with that wouldn't blow him out, but he would kind of swoop his head to the side.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
As if to get that sweeping effect to get the bangs out of his face. So I think every character, you know, for Kenny, it's just loud and obnoxious, and then we just landed, you know, constantly switching phone conversations, and Floyd is just kind of like the breathing tick, you know.
I was there when we were, I don't know where we were traveling, but I'm pretty sure we were at O'Hare Airport, and we looked at each other because there was this guy standing over in the corner on a cell phone, and just, absolutely, you know, and it was just... It was Kenny Tarmac. It was unbelievable.
Yeah, pinstripe suit. He looked like just some kind of big time attorney, and he was facing the window, but he was doing these gestures as if he were in the courtroom, you know, addressing the jury.
Right.
No. Check that. Check. You know, just no. Wait. No. Not gonna fly. And I told Chick the greatest effort was recently. On the tram in Tampa, we land, and the guy next to me is on the phone. And so, you know, those little trams, I think maybe you squeeze 20 people on him. And in this case, it was like 12, you know. So it's uncomfortable, and it's, you know, any kind of noise echoes in that thing. And it's not a long ride, but, you know, all of a sudden you hear, no, wait, no, yes, it does matter. The pitch order does matter, Mike. Yeah, well, if we go third, I have to defend quality control. I'm like, what god-awful product?
Oh, man.
It's so flimsy that the pitch order matters. How much lead is in this?
Yeah, whatever,
you know, it's like, oh, it just killed me. But I was like, oh, note to self, got to save that one. You know,
I used to think that Greg Hahn was Kenny Tarmac, so that was kind of my Haji moment. I thought Greg Hahn was calling it just because he was so loud and
I could see that
the energy matched.
Yeah, okay,
I love your most recent YouTube video, Ron, that with the river River Confessions. Yeah. But you actually did have a bug bugging you. Yeah. And Donnie initially does the thing, and then he loses his mind throwing the hat. Yeah, it was.
Oh, man.
I love it when the real stuff gets in there.
Yeah, traveling, I just figured, I was like, I just wanted to switch it up. You know, you always look for something new or different. I was like, well, every town has a body of water. It doesn't really have to be a river for Donnie, but just stuff for him to open up about, like maybe he's talking to his high school counselor again, and he misses those visits and wants to, for whatever reason, rivers bring out the truth, or maybe it's his confessions can go downstream and be gone once and for good. But,
sure. Well, you know, that's weird. Have you seen the Muscle Shoals documentary?
Yes.
Because they talk about the river, the nearby river.
You know, it never dawned on me that,
And the spirit that lives in the river influences the music, that the studio's so close to it.
Yeah.
And that's what they say. It's Donnie subconsciously. Donnie, you might have done that. You
I think that's what happened. I'm normally have better confessions near brooks and streams, but rivers can bring on a great burden and relieve stress at the same time.
You know, but my favorite voice you do is, I want to say Shu. What's his name? Terry?
Carrie Shu.
Carrie Shu.
That's not a Carrie Shu.
Yeah, he did that.
Yeah. Well, it is favorite. To Chicken Eye, though. Yeah. Yeah. The, buddy of mine that used
did
to play.
Did I meet him one night?
Oh, yeah. You met Carrie. Yeah. I used to play slow pitch softball with him, and that's where for Donnie, when Donnie always says, "I'll probably know more about investigative research." Yeah. It came from Carrie because after four beers, I probably know more about that. Army, motherfucker. And the drunker he'd get, the more he would rush the words, and then he had two buddies. One was Doug, and Doug's formal name was fucking Doug. Me and fucking Doug went papa, fucking Doug. And then he had another buddy named Doughboy that was this big, just a big bloated, happy America. Doughboy, kind of, that's partly Coach Ralph Fontaine's voice, but Doughboy, Doughboy had just, you know, every golf shirt was just bulging out, and he had the greatest job in the world. He sold concrete or something. I don't remember his real name, but Kerry was kind of, you know, he had an expense account, and, you know, what's fun going to golf or titty bars without a buddy? So he's like, well, today we played, how many beers we drank before 18?
Ah, fucking, I spent a case of fucking bud.
We do two cases. And then Doughboy would always lie right in front of Kerry.
I fucking had a half a case.
We had two cases of bud before we teed off. I'm like, why are you asking him if you're just going to lie? He said he had a half a case. But one of the funniest things ever was Doughboy and Kerry get drunk, and so to sober up, they go to Taco Bell. And and he goes, you know, we're pretty pop, and two men ran up a $42 order of Taco Bell. My freezer's still full of chalupas.
Fucking Doughboy kept driving fucking more fucking traffic, and fucking 465, and it's fucking worst day. Yeah.
I am such a sucker for Coach Ralph Fontaine, because I don't know if you guys know this or not. I coached fourth and fifth grade football or something like that.
When?
Back in Piqua, Ohio. This would have been in 79, 80, 81.
Yeah?
And
what?
Yeah, I did. I was your defensive coordinator for
you
yeah.
were the
was
weird guy. You were the weird guy without the kid coaching
no,
the football team.
No, because the news director coached the team, and I was
and
defensive coordinator. And he he just wanted to coach the team.
Okay.
And he was married and had a kid. I mean, it was all...
Pedophile. What he's saying is pedophile. You understand that?
You understand that?
It's pedophile.
And I don't care what you do as Coach Ralph Fontaine. I'm on board.
Oh,
as soon as you call,
man. It warms my heart.
My God. You're going to wake up and you're going to
The first time you did the whole ripping into him, next year you're going to be in kindergarten.
You better wake up.
Yeah, that.
Mm-hmm. Take the knee. It really is. It's not far from the truth. I have four kids.
I know.
Yeah, my oldest son is now in college. He's 20. When he started playing travel baseball, it was a weird thing. It was a very it was a new frontier for those that didn't want to get into the politics of Little League and All-Stars and that mess. You could do this thing called travel baseball. Mm-hmm. And so at the time, this would have been Eric was he was born in 96, so whatever 9 plus 96 is, whatever, circus 2004. Circus 2005. Mm-hmm. So maybe five or six teams in his age group. And so even when we would go to tournaments, it would be the same five or six teams that would show up. Mm-hmm. It's kind of foolish. It's like, well, hell, why did we drive to Muncie when we all could have stayed on the south side of the city? But Now I bet you not only at the 9 and under level, and who knows what it's like for soccer and other sports, but for baseball in Central Indiana, because I had a nephew that, right. that played, but even at 7 and 8 under travel, the team you're talking hundreds of teams.
Hundreds of teams.
And hence Grand Park and all of the other sports facilities that have popped up around Central Indiana and other cities. I mean, it used to be there were four or five destination national tournaments. You had Cal Ripken's place in Myrtle Beach, East Cobb in Georgia, and now every state has kind of a signature tournament.
I can't believe I'm going to get to this on this angle, but I think Little League baseball, travel baseball, all age of baseball, the players aren't the problem. If there's and there certainly is a problem, I would think. The problem are the parents.
Yeah, and it's it is a difficult proposition because parents certainly want to give their kids opportunities, right. and in order to make these things possible, like you mentioned, you just wanted to help out. There are not enough people that have the time, even if they have the interest, right. to be completely unbiased and mm-hmm. unconditional in their support of sport. So inevitably, hell, I'll tell you what, I bought the T-shirts. My kid's playing shortstop. You understand that?
Right.
You know, provide and divide. You understand that? Uh-huh. You want to play shirts and skins, and you can have it your way. My son's going to look like Pete. It's hard. I mean, it's really hard. 99% of the coaches are dads and parents. And so
my tangent is that Josh Arnold and I went to see Lights Out, the horror movie, like a week ago, and there was a couple in front of us that were talking so loud, they were just oblivious. It's 2016. Don't you realize? Have some common sense. Everybody can hear you talking. Why? I think that's the general attitude of across America. It's the same disrespect. I mean, why don't parents go, he's the manager, he's the coach. Why don't these two people talking go, this is a movie theater, let's quiet down. I don't understand. I would never go and talk in a theater or second guess a coach or a manager.
I think it goes with everybody's like, this generation of kids is so entitled and they think the world revolves around them. Well, newsflash, it has something to do with the parents also. These kids didn't just pop out and act like assholes.
And
I think that has a lot to do. It starts there. It starts at school. Like, I'm going to walk Tommy into class every day and I'm going to have a one-on-one conversation with his teacher because I deserve that time in a class of 32. My kid's special. My kid's the best. My kid gets what he wants.
You're right.
And I think that's how it is. And I mean, that's why we have all these teenagers that behave the way they do.
I will never forget the look on your face when I talked to you about Morty and Audrey. And I told you one time, I said, these two kids, and this is after my kids were more or less grown. I mean, Ellie was in college. And I said, your two kids are the best behaved kids I've ever been around. She goes, bullshit. They are not. They're ornery.
They are.
And you know it now.
It's not. It is me actively, and my kids are well behaved. They're nice kids, but they know to act like assholes at home and don't take that shit outside. Mm-hmm. That's all. That's the only difference. And the thing I have actively not participated in things. Like, there's a big football meeting. Max is in middle school and he's playing football. There's a big football meeting, and I don't want to go.
We don't need women in the room anyway.
Exactly.
Teach these kids to shed a block when their eyes are on something else. You understand that?
Right. Well,
you should be out raising money for the booster.
Right.
One mouth, two ears. All right. Look, eyes on me.
No, my
eyes
role.
Eyes on me, ears on the message. You understand that?
Exactly.
You know what? It just struck me. Your kids aren't well behaved. They're nice people. Well, I think that's the larger point.
Yeah, maybe.
You know what I mean? And they know that if they're going to act up, they're going to be jerks. They'll do that at home.
Yeah.
And if they're going to be in public, they're going to act like they have some fucking sense and not talk in a movie theater.
I just don't want to take it personally. So I picked Max up from practice one time and I saw him. He walked up to his coach, was having an interaction with his coach. Well, I didn't, as a mother, didn't feel like that coach was paying enough attention. Max walked up and had a couple questions and he was preoccupied. And the assistant coach was like, look at this video. And I was like, and I could feel my face get red, and I was like, I can't fucking be here. Like, he's got to figure this out for his own. Either he's got to step up and say, excuse me, can we finish this conversation, or walk away. If I see this kind of stuff, I'm going to act like one of those crazy mothers, and I can't. Like, he's 13 now. He looks like a man. No, figure it out. Mm-hmm. Figure it out. I'm not following you to college and wiping your ass.
I think parenting has a lot to do with this generation, but I also think the fact that we have social media now where everyone is told that their opinion matters and they can tweet it, they can post it on Facebook, and what they say is so important that everyone wants to hear it. Mm-hmm. I think that has a
not only their
entitlement.
Not only their opinion matters, but it's needed.
Yes.
You have to make an opinion on something. You have to have an opinion about something. Mm-hmm. Well, sometimes you don't have an opinion.
No, yeah.
And if you do, and sometimes you have an opinion and you keep it to yourself.
And all this advice from the prick who still looks like a fucking kid. The language on you.
He looks like Christopher. That's what he looks like.
My nephew Christopher.
I saw a great caricature that really kind of sums this up. And I forget, I think it was a Facebook thing on the timeline. It said 1970. And it paints a picture of a young pupil, and he's in the principal's office. And the parents and the principal are sneering at this young man. You could tell he had done something wrong. Mm-hmm. He was being reprimanded. Mm-hmm. And then it said 2016, and the same principal's office, and the parents and the kid, arms crossed, are sneering at the principal, mm-hmm. as if to indicate, we'll go above and beyond you. There's a school board, and there's lawsuits, and there's everything mm-hmm. that we can go to. You know, and guess what? It's a diabolical scheme to make sure you're not only going to have this ruling reversed, you're going to be fired and rotten to hell to be registered as a sex offender because you fucked my kid over in the third grade.
Right.
So that's, I think it's so true. And I coach high school baseball, and here's a big irony bomb. I have a son on the team.
Right. Yeah.
So what I did in
he's
order
starting, okay?
Yeah, he's starting. Yes, he does. He's starting. When I took the job, I was vetted twice. When I got the job, they asked me again, how are you know, I had two sons on the team at that time. And I said, I'm going to have an infield coach, an outfield coach, a pitching coach, and then I will make the batting order, but these guys will decide from there. So I basically, you know, delegated 90% of what occurred. And then when it came to batting order and coaching third, I still worked with him on that. Mm-hmm. But I had to. And I think even if I didn't have a kid on the team and this is his last year, that's still how I will go about it. Right. There has to be checks and balances. And yeah, all parents, we'll see our kids in the backyard and when it's a nice, relaxed environment and they excel and they're free because they're comfortable around you. So they may do something that make a diving catch. Then it comes game day and you know, you remember the diving catch in your head, mm-hmm. but they're not as comfortable around their peers. And maybe they're intimidated or they're being bullied or they have no connection with the coach and they don't reach that level. Mm-hmm. So then they're put in the middle. And what happens inevitably is they know what the truth is.
Yeah.
They know. The kids all know the chain of command. The kids all know who should be on the field. The kids all know the truth. But no son wants to disappoint his dad, and no daughter wants to disappoint her mom. So when she comes home, it's a lot easier for those kids, because they are young, to say, the coach doesn't like me. The coach mm-hmm. is playing his kid. And then they could just get out of that uncomfortable situation. Mm-hmm. So each year at the parent meeting, I just challenge the parents. I said, if Johnny comes home and he says A, B, C, or D, just before you email or do anything, ask him if he would be willing to say that in front of his teammates. Wow. And I just think that's a great little,
you know, that's a great
checklist.
Point. When you said that, I kind of got chills because that's true. On our high school team, we all knew who was the starting quarterback. We all knew who the line was.
Yeah.
We all knew who the running back was. Mm-hmm. We all knew. The kids know.
Yeah.
That's absolutely
you remember the
true.
The scene and I don't know, it's the movie League of Their Own, and I know it's a movie, but Tom Hanks is shit hammered. He's drunk. Mm-hmm. He's nowhere to be found.
Yeah.
So then Dottie goes, we need a lineup. Oh, what's so hard about a lineup? Well, nothing. We just, all the way, May, you're leading off. Good. She's good. You know, but she knew. I mean, they had to make a lineup. They had to, you know, they figured it out. There was no coach. But, yeah, the players, even at a young age, they know. I remember I wasn't coaching. It was a comment to a kid that was on one of my son's teams, and he always brought the biggest bat bag. It was like a coffin, and he had two sets of catcher's gear. And you know, and these kids are 9 and 10. Like, hey Jeffrey, why do you roll that shit up here every game? You're not going to catch, you know. And it's like no different than being in a bar with your buddies. Like, why are you getting your wallet out, Dennis? You know you ain't going to pay. You haven't paid the last two trips. You understand that? Still got cheese fries from '86. We're putting down payments on. Put that back. So it's really no different. It's a fraternity. It is. And at the high school level, it's really hard because for most people, that's just a chance. Everybody wants to represent their school. You know, at these travel games, you don't have your girlfriend or maybe the girl you hope is your girlfriend showing up or grandma and grandpa showing up because usually it's away from home. It is a lot of activity compressed into a short amount of time. But for your school, I mean, and school pride, it's still warms my heart that through all of the options in most settings and most cities, that high school athletics still means something. Mm-hmm. You know, I think the one deterioration has been at the basketball level, where AAU, because of its exposure and because of its, you know, they can put the very best against the very best and fly you to Vegas and here are the shoes and this and that. There are a good number of kids that have said, oh, man, the high school thing's just, it's going to hold me back. It's a waste of time.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But for football and baseball, it's still very much the mm-hmm. pinnacle.
Yeah.
Is baseball your first love?
Yeah.
I mean, you love everything about baseball, don't you?
Yeah, I do. But as I've gotten older, it's a game of failure, and it will break your heart. I mean, it is to me so relatable to blackjack. I mean, because at the end of the day, pitching, if you have pitching, you throw strikes, you're going to come out ahead. My oldest son's a pitcher, a lefty. Last night, he couldn't buy a break. You know, gave up 5 runs in 3 innings, and I'm sitting here going, well, what about the law of averages?
Fuck that shit. It makes no fucking sense. Jesus Christ, you'd be better off fucking roll a curveball.
So there are some nights when you question the truisms in the game. You know, it's just one of those. But it's like blackjack. It's like, well, she can't possibly string out 9 cards to a 21 and get out of it. or what pisses me off, I told a dealer once, I would rather lose than the ties or the when you
a push.
Yo, a fucking push. That's the worst. God, what a way.
21.
I would rather lose than all that effort for a
fucking reschedule rain delay.
and Ron would be, he would never say this. He's a very modest guy, but I met a handful of his kids last year at your show at Morty's over Thanksgiving.
He has four.
But I think only 3 were there. Does that sound right?
Well,
only one boy was there.
Got one outfielder, so we don't count him.
Everybody but my youngest. So it was Eric, Abby, and Alex, and then Aaliyah's my
both boys were there? Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they're great kids.
Oh,
and I can't remember which boy it was. It doesn't matter. They're both young. And I had a adult conversation with him, and in the middle of it, I'm going, I could have never had this conversation with an adult when I was 18, 19 years old. Yeah. But they're great kids, and I just felt the need to say that.
Well, thanks, man. Yeah. Probably my baseball highlight for Eric, my oldest, was he had an opportunity to go to Ball State. And we had just moved to Florida from Indianapolis. And I was like, man, that's of all the schools in the world,
right.
You know, it's D1, but do you really want to leave in Muncie? I mean, so we were getting ready to fly to make a visit. And Ball State's a great communication school. And you know, in all fairness, we didn't even make the trip.
It's got Dill Street, a great bar.
we may have fallen in love with it.
Yeah, I did work there.
And it turns out that in the time between that conversation and the flight, he got an opportunity to throw a bullpen at Rollins College. Coach liked him. He loved it. It was much closer to home. And so he had to call the coach at Ball State and respectfully decline.
Yeah.
Well, the coach had called me afterward and thank you for my time. But he said, man, I've never had a conversation with a kid like I had with yours. And it had nothing to do with baseball. But, you know, that was a really good feeling as a parent, you know, like you said, you know, it's nice to know your kids know mm-hmm. when they can act like heathens and when they shouldn't act like heathens.
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely. And I guess that's the real lesson in parenting, like teaching them when to and when not to. Because I know if I behaved the way I do at home sometimes in front of my kids, if I behave that way out in public, they would that wouldn't be okay.
CPS, let's go, kids.
Exactly.
Get the truck.
Yeah, and the things I say, and it's just, I mean, like we don't have curse words at home. We have home words. Like if you curse, those are just home words. Just keep it at home.
My granny is 92 years old. I don't know if it's Alzheimer's or dementia, but my folks will occasionally watch Little Neighborhood Kids.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and she doesn't know. There will be times that I'll go back home there today. That's where I'm staying when I'm in town, and she won't know me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but if the kids are, and these are little kids, are 3 and 4, and
she, I go out there, you pick out a switch, you keep that up, right? You pick out a switch.
That's what you do.
Pick out your own switch. I mean, mm-hmm. oh God, I still get chills.
Uh-huh.
Go out there and get me something to beat you with.
Yeah. That's right.
You mean I have to fetch the beating process?
How on earth can that possibly teach me any sort of lesson? I don't understand.
You're outsourcing
to me.
To me.
I'm providing you the tools to punish me. I can't understand this, grandmother.
What happens if you don't bring the Switch?
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean,
did you ever think, did you be like, no, I'm not going to do it?
Yeah. No, my Aunt Betty Jo said, if I got to get it, then you're going to be in big trouble. So we would get it. And there's times where there would be, I don't know what would happen, but there would be six kids standing around the same bush going, well, do we go thick or do we go thin? Do we go short? We go, what do we do? I don't know, but if she comes out here, we're all in trouble.
Man, those Switches stung.
Oh, gosh.
Man, oh, man.
I heard that the rule of thumb was...
No thicker than your thumb.
Is that what that
is that where that comes from?
Yeah, so it's actually a horrible thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah. The rule of thumb
It would make a whoop sound when they...
If it was thicker than your thumb, you couldn't beat your wife with it, was the rule
was
of thumb.
Okay, thanks.
God, I was over at a girlfriend's house, and she said something smart to her mom, and her mom had a fly swatter in her hand. And so she went to hit her on the back of, like, on her bottom, on her legs with the fly swatter. The plastic part of the fly swatter flew off, and so it was those two metal tongs. And right on the back of her, of her leg, just great big welt of those metal tongs.
No offense, but I thought rule of thumb had something to do with finger banging. Are you sure?
Well, it's how many knuckles you can
If you can fit two in a spare ball, then she's good to go.
Isn't it weird with different generations and parenting? I would say me, Ron, and Jess may fall into the you will administer some sort of punishment, but physical, you really hated doing it. You just didn't want to do it. If you did it at all, if you did do it, you felt terrible. Mm-hmm. Whereas our parents,
they got off joyful, on it.
You know, there was something about that. Am I right?
I think so. They were even fine with other parents.
And at school was fine. Yeah. They principled to
That's
spank
the, one
was
of the
okay.
most accurate scenes in Vibbert's favorite series, Mad Men. Some kid misbehaved at the Draper household and got whacked by some stranger. It might have been Sally or Sally's little brother. I'm not sure who it was, but.
I think it was just a random kid.
Somebody got whacked.
Knocked something
smacked
over.
Smacked in the face or something by a rogue parent. And then the father comes up and goes, what's going on? And he looks at the kid, what'd you do? And the other parent, not his dad, goes, well, he knocked over something. Oh, you did? Whack! He gets hit again by his dad. I mean, it was just like...
Yeah, I remember my dad said that if you got whipped at school, you were going to get it twice as bad when you got home.
I got that.
I was like,
what kind of father do you think Tony Soprano was?
Oh, that's a great... I always loved Tony. Part of me wanted to be... I always wanted to go see My Dr. Melfi, or just to have an open forum to be able to say or question and stuff. But I think... It always made me uncomfortable when I would see Tony's disappointment in AJ.
Mm-hmm.
And I think part of the blame was, you know, Tony was always gone at these hours when AJ would have activities that maybe things would have been different had he not led the lifestyle that he did. Mm-hmm. But
it was a business.
Do you remember when they had to take AJ to a facility?
Oh, yeah.
And Tony took him a pizza and whatever. The conversation that Carmella and Tony have in the kitchen, I lived that moment when she looks at him and goes, because Tony goes, oh, God, I'm so depressed. And Carmella goes, don't you fucking start. Yeah. He goes, Tony goes, what? He goes, don't. She goes, don't start playing that depression card. You got our son doing it now, and I've just about had it. I'm just like watching this for the first time with my mouth hanging open going, was there a stenographer in the kitchen? It was I mean, you don't appreciate how great that series was.
He's going to that fucking military school. Jesus Christ.
And then he put the cap on him and he'd fall.
Oh, he's so handsome in his little uniform. And clunk. Yeah.
He passes. He has panic attacks. He's inherited them like Tony has, and he can't go anywhere.
But on the other hand, the way that Tony defended Meadow when she was, I mean, he curb stomped a guy because.
Yeah.
And there was a time when.
What did he say?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. What else did he say?
And he had such restraint. I mean, I became aroused watching that scene.
I always thought that the best direction the Sopranos series could go was kind of like The Godfather, but make Meadow the boss of the family.
Wow.
Not like the Bella Mafia.
Because she was a badass.
Movie?
Yeah, the women were in charge. It was. And if you look up the history, there's some tangent that they go off on in the Mafia where the women do put money on the street and start kicking ass, and it's just great.
During the war, like with baseball.
Yeah, because there weren't enough men around.
All the men
to
are
corrupt.
The country. The ladies have to go play ball.
And the women have to corrupt and smuggle booze. America.
Yeah, Meadow did get all of Tony's strong traits. Right. And
she knows it, too. You can tell that she's worried about it and when it's going to kick in. And if you haven't seen The Sopranos, you should watch it two ways. And Ronnie told me this, and I'd watched it like two or three times the way through, as you're supposed to watch it. I mean, okay, this is an incredible drama. But then watch it again and think of it as, okay, this is a comedy. It's the funniest thing you've ever seen. Oh, my. If you look at it from that standpoint, it's amazing. I mean, there are takes and there are beats and there are timing and Polly and it's just Polly Walnuts.
There's one scene where one of Tony's capos is whining, and, oh, they didn't pay.
Well, Jesus Christ, what do you want, a Whitman sampler?
Do I have to lay it out for you?
Whitman sampler, like that's going to make it all better.
boo, fucking who?
Oh, what is that? I just cracked me up.
I'm going to watch it again this weekend.
Whoever wrote that line.
That is good.
Ron, you watched it twice through, the once live, basically, then a second time. And then was it the third time or fourth time?
I don't know. You
watch it like a sitcom?
Well, when my oldest son, Eric, was watching it, we would watch episodes together, and I couldn't believe how much I had forgotten about.
Okay.
Yeah.
And, but just how much, you know, even he cracks up at a scene where, I want to say that Adriana had a miscarriage, and so AJ comes down, and AJ has all of these issues, and so Adriana had just left, and AJ is... He's not only depressed, but now he has these big, grandiose ideas. And what about global warming? And what about this, that, and the other? And what about – and he said, you just leave your head in the sand. He goes, how about
put your head through that fucking wall?
Because Tony was eating, and AJ was trying to make – you know, solve all of life's problems during Tony's meal. That's not good timing, you know. Yeah. But he's like, well, just leave your head in the sand.
How about I put your head through that fucking wall?
And, oh, God. I mean, it was just – yeah, tons of little scenes like that that it just
–
Well, and think of most sitcoms. There's – the kitchen is the central place, and a lot of those scenes happen in the kitchen on The Sopranos.
I love Janice. She was my favorite.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
I loved her.
What was it?
I felt like she was my
crazy
spirit.
Bitch, and you felt so good you're on top of it.
Yeah, she was. I mean, I was like, when I hear that song, I think.
She was like my spirit animal. Yeah. I love her.
Richie April put a gun to a head to a dogfish.
Oh. That is the best episode. I think it's the next.
Oh yeah, it's right
next
before
to last episode of season two, I think, or whatever. I don't want to give it away, but it's just a great ending to a great.
I think it's been over for like 10 years. I think it's safe.
Season.
Mm. Oh, I'll never forget the night that James Gandolfini passed away, and I was away. I'm usually away. I'm a lot of times in the evening. I'm away from my phone. Phone just sitting off, and then I'll grab it once an hour or two, whatever. And I picked it up, and I had like 17 messages.
Oh my gosh!
And it was Ron, our buddy Matt, basically going back and forth.
Oh yeah.
And I think it was Ron's way of grieving because he was being funny at the time, but deep down I knew his soul hurt a little bit.
I think I called Tom and just begged. It's like, please, I'll figure out a way, because it took me so long to get that voice down.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is that the voice you worked on the hardest because you loved it?
Yeah,
and
by far.
And then, you wanted to be good at it.
Yeah, and then Frank Caliendo broke my heart one morning. But it was good because it made me work harder, because he said, hey, you're doing Tony? I'm like, yeah. And I knew I was getting closer, and I knew it wasn't perfect. He goes, yeah, he sounds a little Asian. And he was right. It didn't. When I listen back to those old bits now, I'm like, God, it wouldn't even close. So rather than trying to go high, and there's a guy named Billy Blackjack something that did it. He always said that Tony sounded like a baby crying. And so I went lower.
I focused on the breathing.
The breathing.
The breathing.
Yeah, right.
To make this very clear. Got a very delicate situation here. I want to fuck up podcast.
And then once you start low, it's like the national anthem. You start low, you have plenty of room to go up.
Yeah,
but if you start high, then that gets a little.
He talks to Jackie April and he goes, take the sunglasses off.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to say some bad words. Yeah. You know, yeah, I'm going to say some things. I'm going to use some bad words. Oh, my God. Yeah. It's just great.
Chick, help me out here. And I would never, I don't even think I would say this to Ron with the mics off, just because we're buddies and I'd be kissing his ass. But can you think of an impressionist that does impressions of real people or, you know, whatever, that are so good, and Morgan Freeman, whatever, but also does unique characters of his own? I mean, who does that so well? I mean, is there someone out there that does that? I mean, well, you know, Ron didn't even have a blueprint, I don't think, for that. I can't think of anyone.
Of course, Frank does, you know, John Madden and a great Trump. I mean, a lot of guys are doing Trump.
Yes, but they're
all
existing people.
Exactly. I don't know of anybody he does.
Frank's done these. I think Tom will have him when he's on the show. Hey, do an impression of somebody that's not famous. And then he can create them into characters.
Yeah, like his agent.
Yes.
That was a great day when he did his agent.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you created a Kenny. Obviously, they're all... they're off of real people.
Inspiration.
You know? They're inspirations. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, Ronnie's. I think he's the best. I mean,
I just didn't know through. I mean, you're
Doughboy and
me.
Yeah. No, that is. I guess it's funny. I understand what you're saying.
I mean, funny voices of people that we don't know, and funny voices of people are, you know, and material. That's the thing that's. Some people, they would do voices, but there wasn't any real content to what they were saying, and they didn't have
it. It was just the noise coming out of their face.
It was just the noise, and it kind of sounds like what you're the voice you're wanting to do, but there's really nothing compelling me to listen to what you're saying.
Well, that's why so often I think it's the tick, and it's the breath, and it's the speech pattern and the rhythm. That's really what it is. It's not the noise. It's not the sound.
Yeah, that's...
Yeah, and that's what makes you so talented.
Thank you. All of you, but I had to learn. I mean, I remember giving tapes to Marty Bender years ago, and I would turn in a tape and go, "This is it. How can they not do?" But Chick nailed it. There, I didn't know how to write a joke, let alone tell a joke. But I had no material. I could do voices,
right?
But there was no material, and Bob and Tom were already number one without me. Mm-hmm. I mean, and little did I know that Marty was going to bat for me, and he was just always very guarded, I think, with it, and maybe didn't want to kill my spirits about it. But it took me going outside the building to get back in,
right?
And it took me going to do open mics and facing my fear. I was so afraid of doing comedy, I would do karaoke because I had a greater fear of singing because I couldn't sing. So I'd do karaoke, and well, shit, this doesn't make comedy seem too bad. I'm not going to bomb this bad doing, you know, a Wonder Dust in front of somebody. I end up doing stand-up. I would show up at the open mics and chicken out. I remember the guy that ran it was a comedian named Troy Davis, and I think once or twice I would show up and say,
I remember
it took a while to get on the list. Add flat tire, transmission, whatever, you know. And so the first thing I did just to kind of help overcome that nervousness was Arlie Ermey from Full Metal Jacket. So the first thing out of my mouth was to go up and just recite lines from the movie to break the ice, not only my tension but also the crowd, and then go from there. But I would rehearse every morning driving into work, my 6-minute set. So I would get, you know, I was working for the Colts. I think it would have been NDTV. So after, you know, a half hour, I could get, you know, 5 rehearsals in on the way to work. And I mean, I had it memorized, you know, and then gradually from there, build up. And it wasn't until, I don't know how many, and I would start and stop and quit and take, you know, one bad set might go into hibernation for a while. And it was a few years later that Bob and Tom were having local MCs come in during the local 10-minute window, you know, after the show was over. And I had a decent set as just Ron Sexton, and that gave me some confidence. But I had, by that time,
I remember that.
I'd kind of learned how to write a joke by that point. You
what
know?
Year so was this?
That would have been, late 90s.
Studio in the back? Or the
studio was in the back. Studio was in the back.
Okay.
Because you did your thing with Mark that kind of helped you
do
the radio voices.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And Mark was another because I always wanted to be Mark because he did so many, Mark Patrick did so many voices for Bob and Tom during its heyday. And I remember driving to Butler University and pulling off to hear TC at 7:20 every morning. Mm-hmm. And just wondered, it's like, man, how does he do that? And how is he so funny? I mean, because I had no confidence in anything regarding material. I mean, I could do certain voices and make my friends laugh at school and crack up a classroom. But I was afraid I was always going to be that guy that didn't have the balls to get up on stage. I have a really good friend of mine that it is so funny. And boy, when we go out and have beers, he holds court, and I begged him to do it, but he has no interest in doing that. He likes the comfort zone of, you know, well, I'm not going to bomb in front of you guys.
Would you say that you have both your dream jobs? I mean, doing what you do, Donnie Baker, and coaching baseball, right?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And I've been,
Well, you're real flipping lucky.
Yeah. Yep.
No, because I could see, because I was lucky enough to meet Eric Davis, and I know how much your son's named after him, and he was such a sweet guy, and I know how you lit up when I told you that I met Eric, and he was so nice, and I had no idea how much you loved baseball until I heard your voice when you had gotten the job, and you like, you know.
Yeah, my oldest son's named after Eric Davis, but that was my Willie Mays because, you know, I'm an only child. My only brothers were Marty and Joe on the radio. I mean, I remember one night, Tommy Hume, who was just a piss poor reliever for the Reds during my time.
Glasses.
Yeah.
Yep.
He blows a save. I'm tearing up my room, and my mom comes in, and I know I'm in trouble. I know I'm in trouble. And my mom's got this Southern drawl, and I'm getting ready to get my ass beat. And I said, they were up 7-0, down one.
Well, bless his heart. Why don't they just get rid of him?
You know, so even she could relate to it. So it was radio. It was a dear friend of mine, and I started doing radio in high school. We had a radio station that gave me I thought radio was this magical thing. It was just incredible to me. And that's why I didn't play sports in high school. I would have sucked anyway and been lucky to make the team, but radio gave me an opportunity to imitate Marty Brenneman and all of these other people. And that's the only way I knew how to do it was just by imitation. I was always, I think because I was an only child, I was probably 4 or 5 years old, and this foggy memory of standing up in my underwear, imitating Jimmy Carter for my parents and making them laugh. Yeah. And I don't know. And it was the worst impression ever, but
yeah.
I remember them laughing and how good it felt to make somebody laugh for just,
you know. Your parents.
Yeah.
Like Max and I have had that conversation and where, because he's convinced that he's going to be stand up. He's going to do stand up.
Right.
And well, after he said he's going to play football in college and be an art major, I mean, he's, nobody's pissed on his dreams yet. But that feeling, and I remember that feeling of making my parents laugh and going, that's like a high. That's like a high that you chase for the rest of your life. Yeah. And I mean, like in the addiction world, that's what they say. You're always chasing that first high. And I feel like that's how it is when you make, especially your parents, especially an adult as a child, make somebody laugh.
I plainly remember my father sitting on the couch watching Laugh-In, and we would watch it together every Monday night before Monday Night Football. And he would laugh so hard at Laugh-In. I'm going, what is he laughing? And he seemed so happy in that genuine laugh. And I couldn't believe how it made me feel because it was a war zone. And I'm just like, he's happy about and laughing at something. I'm like, I've got to find out what the hell this is all about. And that's how it started.
That's what, if you watch Chris Farley's story, I mean, making his dad laugh, it solved all the family's problems.
Did you watch that documentary?
Yeah, it was good. But even when he was on SNL, he would still chase, is my dad laughing? I think that's just the coolest thing ever, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Well, we got, Ron has a great story that I know Jess is going to love. After the break, I can't wait. We'll kind of shift gears into a whole different realm.
Okay.
That
I'm ready.
You're gonna love it.
Are we gonna start the only child club?
I swear to God, we are.
Call it the only. I didn't know Donnie Baker was an okay.
Yeah,
this is the Chick McGee Show. Clicking all the buttons over there.
I'm trying to make it smooth.
Hi, it's the Chick McGee Show. Welcome back. That's Jason. That's Jess. That's Jeff. Our special guest, our first guest. All of our guests will be special. But this is our first guest. It's Ron Sexton. He does all the voices, pretty much all the voices on the Bob and Tom Show.
Thank you, Chick. It's good to be here.
Yeah, it's the
Ron.
Front Room Studios.
I love this.
Cool. Is it exactly how you thought it was going to be?
It's a little different.
We call it a clawfist.
Half
office, half closet.
Yeah.
And I got the jackets and pants and shirts and jerseys, soundproofing. Sounds good, doesn't it, Vibs?
Yeah, they muffle the sound.
It looks like a room where you'd have an intervention but bring something for Goodwill at the same time.
Like a printer.
Somebody's going to benefit from this, yes.
No, this is cool. This is just fascinating. You know, you can put studios in.
I know, that's the thing, and get it out there and get it heard.
Foo Fighters recorded their last album in Dave's garage, which I'm sure looks like Taj Mahal. It's Dave Grohl's garage, but still it's cool that, you know, that technology is allowed for stuff like this. So, no, it's great to be here.
That's what we need to do is a documentary about the podcast. That would be fun.
Okay.
Ooh, talking head stuff?
Yeah, behind the scenes.
Yes.
Huh? The scenes of the getting together for the podcast.
You know, the whole group wasn't too sure about Chick at first.
Have you seen that Foo Fighters documentary where they... I don't know if it's where he gets the board from Sound City, but they had to have a meeting with the drummer that was for the Foo... Because... Evidently, initially in the Foo Fighters, whoever the drummer was, Dave Grohl was going back in and redoing all the drumming and not telling them at first.
Taylor Hawkins is the drummer. Yeah,
Taylor Hawkins is the drummer now from Alanis Morissette.
I remember that story. He's badass.
Yeah. Yeah, and they just couldn't. Dave, of course, nicest guy in the world. He couldn't bring himself to, and he finally said, "I've got to do this. I've got to get a drummer here because I'm wearing myself out. I can't do. I can't write songs, play guitar, play the drums. I can't do it."
So, did the drummer bring the speaker? I feel like one person's in the band because they have the speaker, like they have the equipment.
You don't call it a speaker.
The amp
in a band.
Sound system. Amp. Yeah, you call it the amp, right?
Amp, monitor,
subwoofers, dumbass.
Subwoofer. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, Donnie, you're a lead singer in a band.
I am a lead singer, chick. I had to be because I was the only one who could afford sweatbands. So.
What's the story you were teasing, Jason?
Well, I'm not going to tell it. But Ron is here's an easy way of putting away Ron. You know, we all kind of develop as we grow older, and we have the people we love and admire. But Ron's sort of becoming Tim Wilson a little bit, and sort of he and I had probably, I don't want to say an argument, but a couple weeks ago when you're in town, we were talking, because I have an electric car, I kind of care about this little earth that we're on, and a lot of people,
whatever, Begley,
like Ron, he's like, whatever, it's just, you know, it, whatever. So we kind of had it, but as, in that moment, it was like, I was like, oh my God, he's becoming Tim Wilson. You know, so anyway, but that led to Ron was telling me about some other communication he had. I don't even know how to get into the story.
Oh, yeah. Well, for the record, I was just saying how resilient Earth is, and I'm concerned about being that's survived billions of years.
People who think they can affect the Earth are full of themselves. And
he got a little pissed off, and so we had a back and forth. And
he and Spiegel were even talking politics. I mean, they were in. I got in the middle of this. It was deep.
I plainly remember the best times on the tour were me, Ronnie, Jess, and Tim Wilson involved in any combination. And throw Drew Hastings in there backstage.
Yeah.
And maybe a Tim Bador just for a little flavor.
Yeah, Tim made Jess cry singing, what was a song, a country singer?
He stopped loving her today.
He stopped loving her today, the day he died. Yeah. And they put a wreath upon his door. Yeah. And we just recently heard that song, and I was like, God damn it.
Yeah.
Who sings that?
I just started crying.
Conway Twitty.
Okay.
No.
Is it Conway? George Jones?
Yeah. No.
It was George Jones.
It was George Jones.
Was
he
George
just died.
Jones.
Whoever it was,
stopped
just
loving her today.
Who sang
Tim
this?
Tim could sing it like
Tim could sing it exactly.
Tim Wilson
I don't
sang
think
it.
George.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, so I got an email from a Donnie Baker fan not too long ago. It was I think it started as a Facebook message, and it was like your YouTube stuff. I live in California. I'm dying. I have a terminal illness. Come to find out it's something like ALS and I have no friends, you brighten my day. And so I didn't – how do you reply to that?
I don't, yeah.
So I just said, well –
wrong number.
Delete. Yeah.
So
that's my maturity.
Yeah.
Wrong number.
So I
– crank call. Crank call.
Jesus Christ. Soak it up. What are you going to do?
So I just – I'll be your friend and write me anytime.
Yeah.
And so once a week I would get her name is Lisa Micheletti. And she lives, I want to say it's out near San Francisco. I'm not even sure where she lives. But I talked to her for like 2 hours last night. So this has been an ongoing, interesting relationship. But she's, again, somehow she stumbled upon Donnie Baker on YouTube. Mm-hmm. So where she lives, there's no access to Bob and Tom.
Yeah. So, to clarify, she is not a Bob and Tom fan.
Okay.
Has no idea.
So did you have
just
to,
not a fan, but just doesn't know.
This is interesting, too. Did you have to tell her that Donnie Baker is not a real person, that you're Donnie Baker? Or?
Not at first. I think she figured, I think because I replied, it wasn't until maybe the second or third.
You actually had an email. She wouldn't think Donnie had an email.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. There's no way he could navigate that. Yeah, maybe she did figure it out somehow, or maybe she Googled it, because she never came right out and asked me, is Donnie real? She did ask me the other day, like, how did you come up with the character? And you know, I get that a lot. And so she asked some of the pertinent questions. Is that your real hair? Blah, blah, blah. So the last YouTube video I did was something I've been on YouTube about, was based upon the Mandela effect. Which is
My God, yeah. I just read about this.
Oh, it's fascinating.
Okay, Do you listen to
Ryan
Singer's podcast?
I don't, but I want to start to now. Jason was filling me up.
Yeah. Gotta get Ryan on the
show.
They talk about
this. This is how I was introduced to it. He does. Yeah. He calls it a third ear bonus, like your third eye, but it's a third ear, and it's just him like kind of introducing like this conspiracy or this different kind of concept.
Well, I mean, I've lived. I remember seeing Chick-fil-A signs where it was just CHIC.
Yeah.
There was never a K on it, ever. And yet when you Google it, you won't see the original logo.
You don't. And what about, so are you familiar with the Berenstain Bears?
Yes. Yeah, that really.
That one really kind of, like, I was like, that's my childhood you're messing with.
Yeah, my wife and my son, when they saw that, their jaw dropped. I never read those books. It's the Berenstain Bears, right?
Or Berenstain Bears.
Not now. It's
Berenstain? Stain? Yeah, it's not Berenstain Bears. It's not. Yeah. It's like the Baron.
It used to be Berenstain, but now it's Berenstain.
Stain.
So if you read it, if you look at it.
No, they didn't change it.
A little too Jewish.
It was never changed. It's always been that way.
How about this,
Jake? People will claim, like, people will go to the graves that, it was Berenstain. It's not.
What the movie with Brad Pitt, interview with blank vampire.
Interview with a vampire.
It was interview with a vampire. Now it's interview with the vampire. And in the movie,
It's Berenstain Bears.
Yeah,
but it's Berenstain. Look on all the book covers. It's STAIN. It's Berenstain Bears. But that's the thing. The Mandela effect
is based on Nelson Mandela because my folks that are baby boomers believe that Nelson Mandela died 20 years ago and then died in prison.
Yeah.
We know that he died, or we believe that he died, a couple years ago, and he after later became been released. The president.
Yeah. He was released from prison. He divorced Winnie. And then died just a couple years ago.
Yes, but there's a good number of people in the population that remember seeing the funeral coverage 20 some odd years ago.
Yeah.
There's also in Tiananmen Square people that remember seeing the footage of the tank running over the protester, which now we see footage of that, and he didn't get run over.
He didn't get run over.
He stands in front of the tank.
Uh-huh. And the movie Field of Dreams. If you build it, they will come. I mean, I've seen that in print. Yeah. But if you watch the movie now.
If they build it, he will come.
That's what it says now.
Yeah, that's what it says now.
And so even old VHS copies have changed. So the theory being that there's a glitch in the Matrix. I had never seen the movie The Matrix. I never knew why they called Jeff Mouse until I saw it. And then it blew me away.
No, here's the thing. See, is this society that thinks the Matrix a real thing?
No, so you are of the opinion that it's changed. You don't think it's always been that way.
Correct.
See, I think it's always been that way. I just don't. I think that the population has decided to, that it's lack of attention.
Well, I think something has changed. I'm of the belief that there is a glitch in the Matrix, or one theory is that it's headed toward some big finale. I don't know.
See, I feel like it's always been Berenstain Bears. I think that people are just not attentive and they're assholes and they say it how they think it should read.
Well, it's kind of like last night when we were at the bar and Josh Arnold was like, We were quoting Silence of the Lambs. It's like, was she a big old fat person? I go, no, it's lady.
Yeah.
It's lady. And we looked it up and it's person. So it's just,
well, it's the same way.
There's a Star Wars line.
Yeah, there's a Star. It's exactly. Yeah, no, I don't know.
There's a Star Wars line that everyone quotes, but it wasn't in the movie.
But it wasn't in the movie.
It was in the movie.
No, Luke, I am your father. He doesn't ever say that. That's not what it says.
You say things like that are endless.
Here's the one that'll nail it, I think. Forrest Gump's on the bench. Mama always said life was like a box of chocolates. Well, it's supposed to be life is like a box of chocolates. It's changed to was.
Yeah.
Was doesn't really make sense. She was still alive.
Yeah, she was. Yeah.
You know, so anyway, this is kind of the premise for what I did a Donnie Baker video about.
You guys, I've been studying this Mandela, this Barbara Mandela effect.
And that's the gist of it.
I believe in this because I've had warts before and they've disappeared. How do you explain that?
So it goes on this convoluted, dipshit, explanation of the Matrix. Well, this Lisa gal emails me, oh my God, I really loved your last YouTube.
Uh-huh.
And by the way, there are parallel universes. And she said, I had a surgery once in the process of this terrible illness that she's suffering with. And she said, I left my body during a surgery. Mm-hmm. And she said, and it's the most magnificent place ever. Mm-hmm. And she said, she couldn't begin to describe the warmth and the love, and she wanted to stay, and she was fighting to stay there, and these three spirit-like figures force her back into her body, mm-hmm. and she raises up in the middle of the surgery, scared the shit out of her doctors, And she knows she's dying and cannot wait to get back there. Has no fear of death,
right.
This, that, and the other. Yep. Since the age of 14, she's been able to reach spirits. She's been a medium. And she said she worked for Sylvia Brown's network for a while. And I'm like, well God, how do you have any credibility?
Yes, that's right. Your name's Ron. Yeah. And
so she said, yeah, Sylvia kind of went a little haywire. And I think the television producers or money influenced her toward the end. But she said she's been able to see dead people. And she said the reason why ghosts are 3 or 4 feet off the ground is that's where the next universe is.
The next plane is, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, wow.
And there's that joke where there's in a parallel universe, there's a giant dog with carrying a little purse with a person in it.
I thought it was a Chili Peppers tape. Parallel universe.
There's something, I don't know. You can't. There's stuff you cannot explain.
Yeah. So this is 5 or 6 emails in. Right. It's not like the first email was, "Hey, I can."
No, Ron. Not you. Don't introduce that information right out of the gate.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I've had some people that offer, "Hey, I'll get you Indian corn for half price." I'm like, "What? Who are you?" So it was this.
I'll take
it. Was this YouTube video
made by an actual Indian? And
so I said, "Well, do you have to be present to reach these spirits?" She's like, "Well, it certainly helps to get the energy."
Sure.
And so I just screenshotted a picture of Tim Wilson, and I screenshotted a picture of my good friend,
Ronnie,
Bill Tony, who was a police officer, who was a dear friend of mine that died in the line of duty. So
I didn't know he was a friend of yours.
You did it?
Yeah. No. And he's come to me in dreams a few times.
Yeah.
And so I thought, well, if you don't have to be present, I'm just curious.
See, I have not dreamed about Tim since he passed away.
And his birthday was yesterday. So this has all kind of come to us. So in any event.
Oh, my God. You know what? Okay, wait a minute. I just got chills because yesterday, I'm thinking August 5th. What the hell?
It's
was it
August
4th?
4th.
What the
his
hell is August
4th?
What the hell is August 4th? And I'm looking up and I'm thinking it's an ex-wife's birthday. Yeah. It's what the hell?
No, you did this with me the other day.
And I'm thinking September 27th.
It wasn't yesterday. It was a couple of days ago.
A couple days ago.
You kept going August 4th. Whose
birthday is it?
Yeah, you did. You went through all of us and there wasn't any of us.
And I'm like, "Who the hell is that?" It's Tim Wilson.
Yeah. So what happened?
Well,
so
that's just great.
I send her a picture of Tim, and I send her a picture of Bill. And I said, I explained, these are dear friends. I don't give much more information than that. I just said that, Tim died a couple of years ago, and Bill was a cop that was shot and killed in line of duty. So a good friend. But if you can contact them, I would just love, because both have come to me in dreams. So she said, "The guy in the cowboy hat, Tim, he's coming through quick and big. I immediately saw him take his hat off and tip it and his head to me as a cowboy gentleman would do to say hi. Did he physically give you an item? He has his hand stretched out towards me as if to hand me something. When a spirit comes through, they do it with, like, for instance, I did a reading for this girl wanting to contact her dad. So he was showing me a letter M and a broken red rose. When I asked her who the lady was with the M name, she said, my mom, Mercedes. She broke my dad's heart. She said, Tim is larger than life energy. I see his chest. His death is related to his chest. He says he's around you a lot, and there are times when you know, so don't blow it off like you don't know he's there." Oh, shit.
Wow.
So I'm like, man, well, the last time I was with him, I handed him a book about the JFK conspiracy, and he didn't want anything to do with it. I solved that shit. Well, so I thought, well, was he handing me that book back? That still puzzles me. But it was a few weeks ago. And in my studio at home, when I call into Bob and Tom, I have his picture framed right above my phone. And one morning, this thing, it shook. I wasn't doing anything. And I was like, it's not on the wall. It's leaned from my desk. If your table here was flush against the wall, I just kind of leaned against the wall.
Right.
And it moved and damn near fell down. So in my conversation with her last night, she goes, "Dumbass, that was him trying to reach you."
Yeah.
Bill, on the other hand, she said, Bill is not coming through. All I can see of his death was violence. When we sleep, our souls leave our bodies. Have you ever felt like you're falling in your sleep? That's our souls returning to our body.
Mm-hmm.
You're probably visiting him while you're out of your body, and it appears like a dream. He has not come back. He is very happy where he is.
That's good. That's got to be comforting,
absolutely.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, everyone goes through this when you're sleeping, and you don't think you're asleep. You think you're awake, and you just jerk.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That happens all the time. And you feel like it's like your body going when into was, that REM, and then you're like, oh, nope, I'm
yesterday,
I'm out.
Yeah. Yesterday was the 4th, right?
Yeah, it was the 4th.
Mm-hmm. I had the most violent shake during my sleep that I've ever had.
Yeah.
I mean, it woke me up, and like the covers were all on my side of the bed, and I'm just like, what the hell?
Well, this is what blew me away a little bit. Yeah. So at this point, I'm like, this is intriguing. This is really interesting. And so I call my wife, and well, she could Google all that. I mean,
that,
you know,
it is hard to not do that.
Yeah.
But right. But there's something that I'm sure there's something.
Yeah. And just the attitude that came through in her description of the way he would
that's
take
exactly
his hat
how
off.
He would. Yeah.
And
I
the
mean,
fact that, well, hell, I've been around your ass last 2 road trips.
Yes, sir.
See on him? Yeah. Yes, sir. Yes.
No, no, no. Is it,
how do you, sir?
How are you, sir?
Yeah. So I said, hey, so happy. There was a comment that I made about Donnie. So happy you're laughing. Are you allowed to ask these people specifics? And if so, who does Tim believe is the best guitar player he's ever seen?
Let me tell you something.
Yeah. I'm not testing you as much as I'm given his appreciation for Guitar Guys. And she scolded me. Yes, you are testing me.
Mm-hmm.
When people are on the line of believing and not believing, they need concrete evidence that anything past the 5 senses are real.
Yeah.
Ron, it's hard for humans to believe that things exist beyond us. They do. I am not that developed, and I don't have a direct line to ask specifics. If I may be honest and vulnerable, I turned away from spirits because I became angry, hurt, and sad for being sick, but I'm trying to be okay. Anyway, I'm not getting a full name to your answer, just the letter S, a big S.
God, damn it.
Favorite
guitarist. Scotty Bratcher.
Peace, Lisa.
Yeah. Scotty fucking Bratcher. If he said that once, he said it a million times.
Scotty fucking Bratcher, best guitar player on the planet. So I emailed Scotty Bratcher.
Did you tell him? Oh my God. Scotty. I told him.
Have you heard Scotty Bratcher? He is the best damn guitar player.
My God. This is how well Scotty channels Tim Wilson, because he gave a great answer. So I sent him this stuff, and he, let me see his reply. It's so funny. He said, yeah, man, been a crazy week, been pretty crazy. I've been putting hardwood floors in for almost a month. I only kind of talked about it. I don't know whether or not to trust a quote or unquote psychic, but yeah, that's pretty crazy. He said, I'm guessing she's meaning Steve Stone from ARS or Steve Gaines from Lynyrd Skynyrd.
Sounds right.
Yeah, I think it scared the shit out of him. Hey, it must be Steve Gaines.
Yeah.
So anyway, I spoke with this lady last night for 2 hours. I mean, it's just been a fascinating, interesting relationship. And I said, well, so when you see these people, like when you cross over, did Tim look like the stately southern gentleman, Tim Wilson? She said that at the next level, it's an age between 20 and 30. You look between 25 and 30 years old, which I thought was really cool. I was like, damn, I didn't, have all this great hair.
No, I don't want 25 or 30. No, I look like a porn star.
Isn't Ed Bizarro?
I've really been open to a lot. Like I said to you, actually, while we were off the air, if we can say that anymore.
Of course.
No. That things that have happened in my personal life have made me be open to everything. And recently I've been reading, I just read a book called Many Lives, Many Masters, or Many Masters, Many Lives, but it references reincarnation. That this isn't our first life, that we're here to learn a lesson. And when we're done learning lessons, that's when we stop going into new lives.
Yeah, that's exactly what she told me. We are here. There is a beginning and end, and we are here to learn what we learn, and then
I read something last night that really hit me is that we're all the same souls, and you kind of have to come into this life going, okay, this is Jesse's life, this is Jess's life, this is Ron's life. And like kind of speaking to yourself in third person, because this isn't your first life, this isn't your first body, but this is the same soul, and kind of addressing it that way. And so just being very open to...
Do you know what I'm going to say?
No.
Did you see what I put up on Instagram like 2 or 3 days ago?
I don't think so.
About the flea or the tick?
No, the body. Thank you, Jeff.
He was on a tick.
The quote
there.
From the tick.
Jeff.
I like that you called it the flea, though.
But I've been so.
You don't have a soul. You are a soul. You have a body.
Yes, okay. Yeah. So So that's reference. Yeah. That's
C.S. Lewis.
Yeah. So that's what it is.
And I just that just spoke to me, honest to God, that morning, and I just put it up, and this was like 3 days ago, 4 days ago.
Yeah. So there's but
Okay, I'm officially creeped out.
I've also read like
Scotty fucking Bratcher.
Yeah, no, right. Yeah, so this just I feel like this confirms it. Not confirms it, but just fosters it. You know, comforts the feeling that. Have you ever heard that when you have a deja vu?
Yeah,
that's actually the universe going. You're on the right path.
Yes, that's exactly what she told me yesterday on the phone.
That it's okay. So if you feel like you've done this before, chances are you have. You've been on this planet.
Yeah.
You've inhabited this life. You've done this, and you've been here, and you've been the same soul in a different body.
Yeah.
And you know, they say what you want. I'm interested, and even when I'm not interested, it's the same way with my friend Sarah, who comes and tries to make me become a Jehovah's Witness.
It is interesting.
Become a Jehovah's Witness. I feel I don't agree with it. There's no way. But you know what? If I don't agree with it, I still want to know all about it. Yeah. I want to know why I don't agree with it.
Yeah.
Because I'm just like, oh, Jehovah's Witness, ha ha ha, no Christmas,
slam.
Fuck you. I'm not doing it. Yeah. That's not.
Hey,
that's
Halloween,
not it.
Kiss my ass.
Yeah, exactly. But I've really tried to embrace like. The synchronicity of everything, like seeing and hearing and you saying the Mandela effect and go, God damn, I literally just heard that term for the first time last week.
Yeah.
And I haven't heard it since. And I Googled it and I was interested and I was like, what is this about? And I ordered the book off Amazon because that's what I do. And just it's just so weird because I've talked about this years ago on the podcast, actually. Well, however long we've been on the podcast, a couple years, 2 years ago. But there's a friend of mine from college, and his dad was killed in a car accident. And he comes to me in my dreams so much.
Did you know him?
Yeah, I knew
prior
him.
Prior to?
He,
okay.
His son and I dated. Like, we were hot and heavy. Like, it was that relationship, like, we're going to go to fucking Vegas, and we're going to get married, and this is what we're going to do. And it was just that relationship that was very young and fun and dumb and just those things. And I admired his parents so much and how much he loved his wife and how much she adored her husband. And driving to work on one day, and he's killed in a car accident just out of nowhere.
And
it was devastating. His son drove up on the
caught accident. Up in the traffic jam.
Oh, okay. So that happened. Yeah, let's spare the details. But this man comes to me all the time. And last night I was in that haze before you fall asleep where it's like I'm kind of asleep but I'm awake, like if I heard a noise I'd wake up, that kind of thing. And in that place, like I know that Ken is standing in the doorway. And then I'm just like, oh no, now I know I'm dreaming, you know, and it's something, and it's just like, what do I do? Do I tell his son, like your dad's telling me the color of the shirt that he was wearing the day he died. He's telling me that he wasn't wearing his regular glasses. Like, I don't know I'm getting goosebumps, but I've been carrying this around, like woke up through the night, turned on my light, and I was like, okay, Ken, you're fucking with me a little bit.
Yeah.
Like, I got to sleep with the light on now because I'm a little bit, like, when you're in that twilight, you're more open to things.
Yeah.
Like, your body's more open to it. But if you're awake, you're like, fuck this shit. Yeah. I'm not doing this
right
now.
And that's
now.
Essentially what she was telling me. Was I was, you know,
you have
typical,
to let yourself be vulnerable.
Yeah, you're right.
Somehow.
I was sticking to those five senses and not.
Yeah.
But it was, I did ask her, I said, so with these people, how do you talk to them? She said, well, they hear you. You just speak to them.
You just speak
you know,
to
so
them.
So it's been, I'm looking forward to road trips now, you know, so.
Just talking out loud.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But, yeah, no, it is. It's a fascinating thing. I mean, and I'll dive into certain. Like I was asking Chick about the moon landing documentary. I mean, I
love that stuff.
Yeah,
I do too. And you know, there are those that go, well, "Why would you?"
And
watch
it's almost
that?
Like you don't have an opinion. You're just curious.
Right.
I'm
fascinated by everything, all the evidence they present, and all the witnesses.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh my god, that.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I don't necessarily. Oh my god! Well, I'm convinced. Yeah. You know, I mean, not necessarily, but maybe. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah,
you don't know. It's, that's the thing that makes me mad about some people. They are so certain about whatever subject.
Mm-hmm.
It's like 9 and 5 are what is 9 and 5? 14. 9 and 5 is 14. You know,
I'm
mean,
my sweats.
And that is like, well, you know, maybe 9 and 5 isn't 14.
Yeah.
You know, I mean.
Yeah.
You don't know that for sure. Fucking open your mind.
I think
it's
14.
Yeah,
it's
probably 14. I think numbers
are. As soon
as
you said that, I was like, Texas Instruments. Where's my Texas Instruments?
With the red diode.
It
just, you can't be sure about anything.
But don't you feel like when you heard that, and I don't know where you are, or where any of you are in your opinion of death, except for Chick, that he is hell bent because I am. We recently went to the doctor and they were like, hey, do you have a do not. resuscitate. Chick's like, no, you exhaust all fucking possibilities. No, no, no. You keep me alive.
I want you using experimental technology. I want you using cockroaches, the whatever you need to do. Yeah. Keep me alive.
The nurse looks at me and I was like, he's not kidding.
Oh, that's
not
hilarious.
Kidding. No, I was kidding,
that's
obviously.
But that's the thing is that it's just like there is a part of you that's like, God, I don't want to die. That would suck. And da-da-da. But the more comfortable you get with the idea that this isn't it, you're like,
yep, kill me.
Let's do it.
Well, I asked her, I said, what is this? Is there a heaven and a hell? She goes, Betty, I think this is hell. That's what she told me, having visited whatever that next thing was. When you consider how much evil and how much...
I'd go along with that.
Yeah, I mean, I do. I mean, it's you look at all the people that, you know...
There's this... It's a psychological principle. There's the seven phases of the acceptance of death or something like that. And by the time
basically the mourning process.
And you get to the last phase and you're like, okay. You know, because that's the only way it could work. Because no one would... I mean, every death would be... unbelievably awful. I mean, some of them are, obviously, but...
Well, we've talked about, too, that in experimenting and trying other treatments for my daughter and her epilepsy is that I've had someone tell me, this is not your first life together.
Mm-hmm.
You and your daughter, like, I know you're fearful that your kids are going to die, but that's only because your kids have died or been taken from you in a previous life. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, fuck, like, she know, like, I mean, like, I have a very serious, nervous, like very scared, like too scared to the point that it affects my daily life sometimes. Yeah. And she said that, and she was like, and with your daughter, she said, this is past life regression. This is past life flashbacks that she's experienced. Something happened in another life. She said, this isn't your first life together, that you guys were in the Holocaust together. You were ripped apart, and that's why you have such a tie. Like, you have to stay with her. You have to stay close, and you have to. And acknowledging that and going, okay, you know what? When something happens to her, somebody else can go, and not, you know, like... Like, this is, like, having faith in other people and going, you know what, I trust you and you're going to keep my daughter safe. It's okay.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, this is going to make you breathe a little easier. This is going to make you... I've had doctors tell me, you need to chill the fuck out. It's you that's causing this.
Wow.
They say that my stressful energy causes her stress, and yet this happens. I've been told so many things that I'm just like, God.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just like, well, we'll try any of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but it's nuts. And so this past life thing is very new to me. And like now I'm like, I'm reading all the books. I want to know. And being open and even in that twilight state going, I used to be scared of haunted houses. But now I am open to the concept that a ex-college boyfriend's dad might be in my doorway, you know, like, and going, oh, okay, here we go.
Were you her mom in the past life?
Yeah, she said we were mother and daughter.
Mm-hmm.
I've read stories recently where it's like it comes back and like a son that was killed. I read a story this last night. A son that was killed as like he was killed in the war.
Mm-hmm.
And now that son is this woman's grandson. You know what I mean? Oh, like it comes back that way. Like it's not always, but... I read a story about a woman who couldn't get pregnant. Her and her husband couldn't get pregnant. And finally she was open to like when Western medicine has failed you so much, you're like, I'll try anything. You put your faith in anything. And she looked up and she was like, look, if we've got any unfinished business up there, you better come down here now because, you know, and then she was pregnant a couple months later, just saying, hey, if somebody's looking for a body, I need a baby. Let's get this started.
Donnie Baker the Bastard. My girl. I had a hit and run that they couldn't prove happened.
It's just, but then, you know, I mean, and then you get to, obviously the stereotype is the extreme.
Yeah.
And you get to that stuff and then you're just like, I'm not there yet. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know about all that.
Did you read, oh gosh, I even hate to mention this, but have you read anything about the incredible Patton Oswalt and him losing his wife recently.
It's
most incredible love story you've ever heard. They've got this beautiful little girl, and his wife just passes away in her sleep at night. Mm-hmm. And I can't even bring myself to say
she was an incredibly talented
word
crime writer.
In this,
And
Patton wrote a piece for Time, and part of it is depression is bullies in grade school. Grief is Jason Statham ripping the heads off the bullies in high school and shoving them down the toilet.
He goes, I don't know what life was like until I don't remember what life was like until the air around me caught fire and the sun went out.
Oh, wow.
I can't.
How do you, yeah, like to put words to the love of your life, literally the person, like your other half that made you whole is gone.
Mm. Yeah.
Like if that's not going to make you believe in the next life, what is going to? You have to have faith
in
something.
How could Patton, and he goes, obviously he has to, you know, because Alice, their daughter, is like, I mean, that's Alice who said that everything I do is a tribute to my mother.
Yeah.
And she's, what, 5 or 7? Or I apologize for not knowing her age. But the whole thing is just, I mean, you'd have to start believing in something or you would just walk out into traffic. I mean.
And, you know, I mean, and I don't know, and maybe you guys can reference this, but, like, I didn't go to my first funeral until I was, like I was 10, 11, 12. And it was my dad's cousin who committed suicide. Mm-hmm. That was my first funeral. And because my dad had lost his mother in his early 20s, and he kind of really did, like, he didn't want to expose my brother and I to death, and maybe that's why we were so fearful of it in that concept. But I have not, like, I've lost an aunt, and that's as close to me as I've, all of my grandparents are dead. I've been unaffected by it, and I don't mean that cruel, but either I wasn't close or they died when I was young. But I have yet to lose someone like that would affect my life.
Mm-hmm.
I'm 35. I'm really fucking fortunate that that's been the case. Yeah. I had an aunt who helped raise me, and that was heartbreaking, and I was there when she passed. And there is something about, there's something therapeutic knowing that someone is suffering and has suffered for a really long time and watching them, like, just watch the pain stop. Watch peace come over their face and it be over. Yes, in a selfish way, I wanted her to still be here and I wanted to still take care of her, but as I've matured, I've realized, obviously, her quality of life would have been nothing.
Yeah.
But I have yet to lose someone close to me, a parent, a sibling, a child. Obviously, I hope that doesn't happen. But I don't know what you do when you lose someone like that and how you cope. I mean, like, I would probably spend thousands of dollars trying to pay psychics and mediums and trying to connect and do all of these things. Like, I would lose my mind. Have you guys watched Stranger Things on Netflix?
I haven't.
Yep.
Okay. Well,
finished it.
Okay. Well, Winona Ryder is, for to be very vague, her son vanishes. Let's just say that. Her son vanishes and she does. She goes batshit crazy trying to communicate or trying to find him. And somebody's like, God, that's not. And I was like, no, it's not. No, it's not. Are you kidding me?
No.
Are you kidding me? I would go to the ends of the earth if I was missing a child. Well, I'm trying to figure it out.
This medium that I met, this Leah. So I asked her, I said, how do you not spend all day? You have this incredible power.
Yeah.
How are you? I mean, why did you have time to email me? Why are you not? And she said, well, it's like anything else in life. She said, are you Donnie Baker all the time?
Uh-huh.
And so I thought, I was like, you know, we moved to Florida 6 years ago, and I'll never forget. You know, oh my God, we're going to Florida. So we live in Florida.
Hot damn, we're going to Florida. Yeah.
Put the float on top of the car. Now we'll finish up these pecan logs we got in Valdosta.
You know what those wood panels are for? Starting for last fire. Yeah. To stay warm.
That's right.
I remember when to jump in here, Ron was miserable when they moved. Because remember, you were trying to sell all your kids' shit and stuff and dumpster fulls.
But we went to the beach probably twice a week for the first month. And
then
it was once a week. And then I've not seen the fucking beach in years.
So I hate the fucking beach.
Yeah, so it's like, well, it's all relative. So she has this incredible power, this thing, and she's been there, done that, because of somebody that she met through YouTube. I think she felt compelled. Okay, I'll fancy this guy. I'll reach out, and oh shit, Tim comes in strong. The other guy doesn't. But Chick said something on the air the other day about funerals. How it wasn't until my third or fourth that I really realized, and it was Bill Tony, my police officer. I was in a car for his funeral procession for like 6 or 7 hours, but it's a healing effect, and I remember every emotion in that car ride. And then we get to his widow's house at that time, and one thing haunted me and one thing healed me. But on his refrigerator was a list of things that he was wanting to do. And I'm just looking at this list, and it's just all, you know, rotate the tires, change the oil in this car, you know, and just all these mundane tasks. And I'm staring at this list, and it haunted me. And but then I remember taking a bite of, you know, everybody's bringing food, you know, and just a bite of chicken, starving, and something about eating that piece of chicken was just like this healing effect overcame me. I was able to carry on a conversation again. And, you know, they say chicken soup is good for the soul. And I in this case, it was the kernel, whatever, you know, that allowed me to kind of not have a breakdown there. But I actually remember writing notes or a poem called The List based upon that. And I don't know where it is, but just part of my grieving process. But initially, in my case, when somebody passes, it's close. And I've had it happen a couple times. Initially, in his case, his father had died. So I had a sense of comfort knowing, oh, my God, Bill's with his dad.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until a couple days later that I went into a rage because he was murdered. In Tim's case, I remember going, oh, my God, he knows all the answers now. And he felt like he was put on this earth to solve these Ted Bundy murders in his hometown. Yeah. And I just pictured Tim holding court. And Jesus, take a seat. I've got this shit. I mean, hey, man, you and St. Peter can kiss my ass. I've had, you know, like, I just pictured him kind of holding court in Heaven's green room. But I was like, oh, my God, he has all the answers.
Oh, man, those green room conversations. Yeah. Oh, yeah. My God.
Yeah, but if you there's been a couple of times, and I know that he said, you know, when I get to heaven, I'm whooping the hair angel's ass. And I've heard him say that. But there's been a couple of other times where I have listened to the iHeartRadio stream of the old shows and him referencing his death. And it caught me off guard. I was like, doing that mom busy work, nothing. And I hear it in the background and I hear him say, when I die. And I was like, I felt my chest get tight and I was like, God. But whatever he said I didn't even pay attention because I just heard him say, when I die. And I was like, God damn, Tim. You know, and for a split second, I was like, man, I don't know if you're here, but we sure fucking miss you.
Yeah, but we're all going to do it. That's what that lady said. Yeah, I mean, it's, we're all going to do it. Yeah, she said, you know, it's
better figure it out.
Absolutely. And she's, you know, she's like, I still try to live life. You know, here she has a terminal illness, and it's not ALS, but the reason
I know what you're talking
they
about.
They can't find a cure. There's only like, I don't know, three people on the planet that have it. They can't even begin to do research.
Yikes.
Well, I don't know how deep we want to get into this, but per usual, I have my father died very early in his life. He was 43 years old, and I was 24 years old. And it was a shock, but I knew when I received the call, I was working at a radio station in Piqua, Ohio, and my oldest daughter was like 2 years old. And I knew when I got the call, somebody came down to our apartment and said, you need to call your grandmother, which was my dad's mom. And I'm like, I know. When they said that, I knew that my dad was dead.
Like you didn't have a phone. Someone said, hey, someone called the station. You need to call home.
Right. So and my wife at the time wasn't at home. I don't know where the hell she was. But I put Jenny in her car seat and no, that's not true. I was trying to remember. We didn't have a car. All we had was a bike and I had to carry Jenny down. And I lived close enough to the station. So I walked to the station and walked in. And I remember calling my grandmother, who I always called Lena. Her name was Helena. And Lena, he's dead, isn't he? And she said, and she just couldn't say anything, but yes.
Wow.
And I mean, I remember the lights. It seemed like the lights in the room, I'll never forget it. Someone was turning them off and on really slowly when she said that. And I'm like, okay. And we had just come back from Columbus, London, Ohio area. And I said, okay, we'll be there in the morning. And I went, I had to walk back, Jenny back. And and I lost my mom too, far too early. I mean, she was 60, but still, I mean, it was, you know, too early. And
it was 25 years apart or something.
Yeah. But I mean, but she had sepsis, which I later found out was the second leading cause of death in the United States.
And they get it in the hospital when they're being treated for something
else. It's an infection. And she was constipated and she hadn't gone. I mean, she didn't eat right and whatever. And it was up to me and my oldest daughter. Do we pull the plug on my mother, who has been the more or less my tyrant,
the root of your,
And every psychological problem I have, which there are many, and each of you can name four or five different ones.
Chick, I have this list.
I mean, it was up to us to, you know, do the pull the plug thing. And I mean, but there was something calming because they were explaining it to us. And I can't say that I love my mother at the end, but
you told her you did.
I told her I did, and My daughter definitely did. I mean, they were very close. So I more or less gave it the responsibility. It was kind of a pushed out kind of thing, but I said, Jenny, whatever you want to do, I mean, and there was, when the time came, I mean, we both of us knew that it was, yeah, we should do this because she's not going to wake up. And, mm-hmm. yeah, but there is a calming effect. And when it, I mean, we were there when she passed away. I mean, and it's, I can't describe it. I mean,
it is weird to watch. Well, you've even talked about your mother's husband. Watching him
you
pass
always
is,
hear
very, a, is very different from
always,
a lot of the other stories.
You always hear about how people, you know, pass away sleepfully, peacefully
yeah.
and they're in their sleep, and they're like, okay, is it? Well, he fought it like
yeah, Chick said it's the
business.
Most bizarre thing he's ever seen is
I
someone
mean, his,
fight dying.
His eyes
he's
got
dying.
Big, and he's pulling at the sheets, and he's like, doesn't want to go, and I mean, it's coming. And
so
it's,
you wonder what he was seeing.
Yeah, and what was he
it's
seeing?
Not the
I mean,
light.
Was he going
it's
down?
Not the
was
peace.
He going up? Was
yeah.
he, I mean.
And maybe it's just the unknown, you know, because again,
being
I mean.
Fearful,
it,
yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, yeah, again, and the this my new friend Lisa, in her opinion, that it. It is predetermined. It's going to happen. And,
yeah, it's
and
already
so
decided.
Maybe it was a newly formed denial that, well, I'm never going to die. I'm going to live forever here mm-hmm. that he was fighting in his last guy. I don't know. I mean, it's so hard to explain, mm-hmm. but we'll see. I mean, it's, we'll but see. Coming up.
It's so funny, but don't you think, like when you said that, I was like, what? Like, what the fuck is Tim doing? Because if we would have, like, Tim was raised in a Baptist home. Like I don't know religiously, but I mean it was like Southern
so.
Baptist, I want to say. Mm-hmm. And so this is fire and brimstone, and it was pretty black and white. Like there's hell and there's heaven, and either you're going to one or you're going to the other, and there's
yeah.
no other questions.
I'm qualified to teach your kids English.
Yeah.
Right. So what? So him yeah. standing on the other side, going, Ronnie, I'm right fucking here.
Yeah, I know how. I know. That's why I thought. Well, if it's, I mean, but you never know. She said, like I said, my other friend was. Long gone. He was, and again, he's been gone for over 10 years.
Yeah.
So maybe it takes time. She said that that everybody goes to that you have a period of orientation, mm-hmm. that there is a process by which that we all have issues that whether it's some kind of physical handicap here or mental or whatever, that you go through an orientation process. So maybe Tim's still in orientation, but she said he's been around a lot. She goes, oh, your friend, Big Presence, still hanging around a lot, is
yeah,
what she
still
said.
Still around a lot. Mm-hmm. Then you wonder, too, if he's around with everyone or if he's just around, like you said, like realizing that your grieving process with your
this
friend
is
very
so
different than with Tim.
I'm gonna tell you, and you're going to, everybody in the room is going to get chills, but when did I send you that letter? Like 2 weeks ago?
Probably in reference to the things he's learned from his dad and from Tim and how they're kind of similar.
And I just and it, I don't know why, but Tim and my dad had both been on my mind for a really long time, and I had to send and
very unique individuals, very honest.
And
very,
they both more or less they both looked alike and they both acted alike and didn't give a damn and were very smart and reserved. And well, you wouldn't know
and,
about
but people
my dad,
but people would assume otherwise.
Yeah, they would assume otherwise. And I wrote a. I write, but that's, I mean, I don't, I'm not very good, but I mean, I remember writing this like 2 years ago, and then I, like lately, it has really been on my mind. So I sent her an updated version of it, and it's just odd that it clicks into place with everything we're talking
yeah.
about right now. And what?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean,
my brain is screaming, what the hell's going on?
Yeah,
it happens. It happens. And I don't, and I've always, and you know this, I've said this for a long time. You go, everything happens for a reason. I go, fuck
it
you.
It really does.
It does.
I'm
but
sorry,
it,
but it does.
But I am. I'm real. I still, yeah. to a degree, when people say everything happens for a reason, I'm like, fuck you. You know, you just ate at Wendy's. You know, you're trying to not take responsibility for it when you
yeah.
say that. There's right. another way of saying everything happens for a reason. What we've talked about in the second segment of the Chick McGee
Destiny.
Show is the other reason. Is the other reason things do happen. And it's like the more you open your brain to the possibility that it's not just us sitting around this table, you realize that there are other messages, that there are that you know very well that Tim is Tim saying, hey, Jess, or hey, Jissy, or however.
Jesse?
You know, Jesse. Yeah, how he would say Jesse. It. Yeah, exactly. And it's
Jesse makes all my travel arrangements. Yeah. I don't have a credit card. Don't believe in him.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and it's just.
Remember him saying that?
That's just, Mark of the Beast.
Yeah.
We had a whole bet about it.
We did, yeah.
Now, Jesse, I'm going to give you my phone number, and I want you to call me every now and then because. Because
I'm driving Ari all and my. I are over driving the, yeah, the state whole of state of Texas.
Yeah.
The state of Texas. You know, left one show.
Me and my little son went from El Paso to Beaumont. Yeah. One night.
I had no idea. I thought El Paso was like 20 miles from Beaumont. Yeah, I didn't know it was 600.
Didn't.
Oh, God.
He said, call me. He said, set your alarm and call me at 3 a.m. and make sure I'm awake. Make sure we're alive.
I was standing right
literally,
there.
Like, yeah. And I was like, okay. Set and my phone alarm so that I would wake up and call him and make sure that him and Ari were okay.
We got off stage and everybody went back to and went to bed. Tim and Ari got in a car
got
and started driving across
got
Texas.
In his truck.
Got in his truck, started driving across Texas. The next day, we're doing everything we do. We go to the airport. We fly. We get off. We get to our hotel at like 5 o'clock.
We get ready. We get there. We go to the venue. We are 5 minutes to show. And here comes Tim.
Here comes Tim and Ari.
And
they had
Ari.
Been driving that
they
whole
had drove
time.
The whole
he hadn't showered.
Time.
He hadn't slept. Here he comes, and he's going to go on and yeah. do a show.
And go on and do a show. And that's the way that Tim rolled. But I know that there's been a couple of times, and I don't know if it's ever been beneficial or if I would have opened my mind to it and really thought about it. But the there was a couple of times that I disappointed Tim, and it's so minor. But I. When you disappointed Tim, it was like, it was more than apparent. It was like,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, you didn't want to do that. Here's the thing. Tim requested one thing. He was very, very low maintenance on the road. He needed a white towel. He needed two white towels because that motherfucker would sweat the moment he walked out on the stage. Oh, yeah. And he told me, and the first two times I forgot. And he would look at me and he kind of just tilt his head down and look at me and he didn't say anything. And I was just like, oh. Mm-hmm. So we've been side stage a couple of times that I've traveled with Chick to something, and I've seen a stack of towels, and I'm just like, God damn it, you know, like yeah. I just that's yeah. like that's my little like I don't know if he's saying hey or yeah. saying right. it's okay, it's not a big deal, but for me, when I see that side stage, and I go,
yeah,
you know,
if you believe there's no coincidence, and you know? Now I do. I mean, right. yeah, absolutely. I have
you know been on. In October I'll be on the radio for 40 years. I've been talking on the radio for 40 years, and I've been on the Bob and Tom show. And
should we plan something?
No, I think it's a round of applause. I just want to
drop that bomb. And I've been through a lot, and I've seen a lot, and I've done very well, and been very happy in my life for the most part. And I've been in love, and my kids have been born. But when Tim would look at you and he would say, that's right.
No, it was all
it's
you needed.
Something you'd said.
Yeah. It was all the validation you needed.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, it's the same as making your parents laugh for the first
absolutely.
Time.
Absolutely.
That's
yeah.
right. That.
Yep. Yep. Yeah, and he had the way with his hand, he had a hand gesture where he yes. would, if he was getting ready to make a point, he'd take that's all five right. fingers and
yeah.
And then point to really hammer that point home. But absolutely, man. It was what a great soul. And that's why I'm not surprised that he came through
that
in such
through,
larger
yeah.
than life
right.
to this lady.
Right.
You know?
It
there's
is,
not a time but, that I hear one of his songs that I think, I cannot believe he's gone.
Yeah,
I just
it is.
Can't believe it.
It is. And I feel like this is probably the longest that this has happened with someone where it's been like how often I go, fuck,
yeah.
he's not here.
Yeah.
You know, like the grieving
I
part,
I
think it's
him.
Different because...
I can't call him and go, I'm
because
sorry.
Because I think you said this, Ronnie, when you called in after he passed away, that you kind of just think he's still out on the road
yeah,
somewhere.
That's how I envy every exit.
Yeah.
You know?
You know?
That's why I love, I have, it warms my heart to go into a convenience store, and it drives my wife nuts. But I love... loitering. loitering.
Have you seen the giant dolls
yes.
that they have at the truck stop?
Disturbing.
They're so disturbing. And
that's
hideous.
What haunts me. That's
oh, my God. I don't know where I'd been, but I went to, you know, take you a piss bet. Or whatever, yeah. and I go, it was like, yeah. they're like these giant Dutch yeah. feet featured with the pigtails, and the, it's like, what the hell are yeah. those? And they're selling like hotcakes.
Mix that with some antique brass. I'll be on a shitter for 2 hours.
But no, it's it was just – it was something about – because I was always jealous of people that smoked because when they smoked, it was just that puff of –
on break.
Well, it's the camaraderie of standing outside with people that.
Well, you know, and nicotine is the only drug that if you need to be calmed down, it'll calm you down.
Yeah.
You need to be jazzed up, it'll jack you up a little bit.
That's kind of what interstate gas stations and convenience stores do for me now. I'm always curious, are they going to have any, how the fuck do you not have dark chocolate? 2,800 square feet, there's no dark chocolate.
Dark chocolate, Boston baked beans.
Yes, I mean, you know, and it's my terrible diet, but I mean, I just love... just little timeouts of life, you know, to go there. And it reminds me of, you know, of being with him and always learn something. Like I said, the cracked me up because stuff that I would never think of buying. There was a big display one time, jalapeno Cheetos.
Jalapeno Cheetos.
Yeah, I'm looking at that going, oh my God, that's horrendous,
who would
man.
Do that?
And he said, jalapeno Cheetos in this big bear paw. Four packs and an O. Henry bar, and we're back on the road.
Back on the road.
Yeah, but
if there was a
and
Wendy's.
He shouldn't have been eating it. And those milkshakes at Wendy's. Yeah. They're the best.
Strawberry milkshake at Wendy's.
Oh,
yeah.
My God.
Yeah,
he got me hooked on strawberry milkshakes.
Oh, yeah. We were on the road once, and it was when he was, and we all remember this time. I feel like it was, we were all kind of in battle, you know, like active, but when he was writing the book, like you knew there was going to be some shit and there was going to be something new.
Yeah.
And he was reading us the book, or we were talking about it, and he said this and this. And I said, what about the window? Or I said something about that. Yeah. And he was like, and I feel bad, but I never regret saying something so much. I had to change travel arrangements because he was going to fly there.
Yeah.
Wait a minute.
He was going to do something.
Yeah.
I had to call Deirdre. It cost me so much time in suggesting, Tim, what about if they did the window? What, I don't remember what exactly it was. Something to do with the window.
Yeah.
And going, oh, shit.
Yeah.
Now I have to change everything.
Yeah, he had Dusty got it. It was one of it warmed my heart to read it, but he appreciated everybody that helped him with that. And I think he was aware toward the end that I sort of hijacked these people's lives for about the last 9-10 years with this bullshit.
Yeah.
But he wrote and he gave Dusty a copy of the book, and he just put, fuck John Bonham, you're my favorite drummer.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Is there a better compliment in the world?
You would say something, and he would recognize it and go, that's right. That's exactly right.
Oh, yeah.
And you're like, oh, my God, that's like.
I kind of am curious to know, like, if what he wrote, like, when he gave me a copy of the book, if he wrote it in anybody. But he wrote, Jesse, thanks for helping with this spaceship story.
Yeah.
Like something really bizarre. And I was just like, God, you know, I mean, even that little thing that I suggested that I don't know what it did,
it goes
but
back
he acknowledged it. And he was appreciative.
He believed he was on this earth to write that book and to solve those murders because he and his father were in a courtroom for some other issue, standing behind one of the prostitutes that was murdered.
Right.
And he believes only one person on this planet could have been in that position. So again, it just drives home that point. Do you believe in coincidence? I don't know now after that. I mean,
but
again,
knowing
as
a child,
everything
he was standing
for
there.
A reason.
He was standing there and not knowing what he was witnessing. It was just, it's nuts. All right, Jeffy, you okay?
Jeffy, have you been to a podcast that people cry yet?
Can we call this Sad Box 2.0? I didn't like it.
Thank you for listening to the first ever Chick McGee Show where the host cried and the hostess cried. And
we probably
kicking it old school.
The original off the air. I mean, it was the
off the air podcast.
It was probably the second or third episode, and it was like every episode for 50.
Yeah, we were on a streak there for a while, but we certainly missed Tim. And if you haven't had a chance to listen to any of Tim Wilson's music or the Ted Bundy story he wrote, it's kind of hard to get the book now, I think. Or
it's
I'm
not
hearing
as easy.
That.
Yeah.
Yeah, I get emails every now and then from obscure places. How can I get Tim Wilson's Ted Bundy book? I don't know. I mean, it's, you know,
I feel like they might be doing another release.
Yeah,
like there might be another release coming out.
And there's some good YouTube stuff where he talks about it, so you can just search that too.
Okay.
And that has been Ron Sexton, and he's an amazing talent, and it was nice to have you, Ryan.
Hey,
thank you,
Chick. Thank you all. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jason. Thank you, Jeff. Thank you, Jess.
Okay.
Good night, everybody.
Is your basement or garage full of old house paint that you know you'll never use? I know mine is. Avocado green, hot pink, antique white. That is a nice shade of white, though. You know, it's easy to recycle your leftover paint, stain, and varnish all over California. Most paint care drop-off locations are paint and hardware stores that take back leftover paint. Keep what you need and recycle the rest. Find a drop-off site near you at paintcare.org.
Virginia buries its dead. I'm Rita Foley with an AP News Minute. Virginia Governor Terry McAuliffe is talking about President Trump's response to the violence in Charlottesville over the weekend at a white supremacist rally.
Those remarks are dividing people. We cannot be dividing people.
Governor McAuliffe told CBS this morning he knows two of the three people who were killed that day.
I have lost three great citizens yesterday, Heather Heyer's funeral. Tomorrow we will have to put to rest Trooper Burke Bates, who had been part of my executive protection detail, and then on Saturday, Lieutenant Jay Cullen, who'd been my pilot. This breaks your heart.
Heather Heyer died when a car rammed a group of protesters. The two Virginia State Troopers were killed while monitoring the rally when their helicopter went down. Prison visitations are off at a state facility or all state facilities in Florida, where they say they have credible intelligence indicating some sort of security threat. There are no details available yet. I'm Rita Foley.